Trendstorm.
Welcome back to Trendstorm. Now let's take a look at Stephen Paddock's killing spree. The worst ever mass shooting in recent U.S. history took place on the 1st of October, when a man killed over 50 people at a country music concert in Las Vegas after opening automatic fire on them from his nearby hotel room. The lone wolf Caucasian gunman was identified as Stephen Paddock, who was said to have been a high-stakes gambler from the area who never had any run-ins with the police. As of yet, nobody knows exactly what drove him to go on his killing spree, though Daesh did attempt to claim responsibility once news of the attack emerged by claiming that he converted to Islam a few months ago. The FBI doubts this narrative and said that it hasn't found any evidence to indicate that this is the case, and his friends and family have gone on record as stating that Paddock didn't have any deeply held views that they knew about concerning anything at all for that matter. As all American tragedies have a sad tendency for doing, however, this one is also increasingly becoming politicized over a couple of polarizing issues. The first one is whether it should be classified as a mass shooting or as an act of terrorism, with authorities using the former because no clear political motive has been found, while some regular folks are opting for the latter because the incident was nevertheless meant to spark terror among the population. Cynics have also said that the government would probably have classified it as terrorism had a Muslim or a person of color been involved, remarking that mass shootings are the exclusive domain of Caucasians. A less rhetorical and more real-life issue that sprung up in the wake of this attack has been over security at public venues, such as concerts, and the disturbing ease with which the gunman was able to take multiple firearms and other murder accessories to his hotel room. Relatedly, the topic of gun control has expectedly emerged once again. While there are many lingering and uncomfortable unknowns about this entire event, the fact is that someone did indeed kill over 50 people and injured around 10 times as many. And the resultant firestorm over what to label this tragedy, how to better protect Americans, and the never-ending debate over gun control has the chance to turn this into one of the most politicized incidents of Trump's presidency thus far. Folks, this is such a sad and tragic event, and I want to remark that, I mean, what happened, it really is a sin. It's such a tragedy, and really, my heartfelt condolences go out to all the victims, both those who were killed and those that were just injured. I think this is very, very sad. So, folks, we're going to begin discussing this issue, and we're joined by Mr. Scott Rickard. He's a former American intelligence linguist and geopolitical analyst who will tell us more about what happened.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Scott, what difference does it make over whether this event is labeled as a mass shooting or an act of terrorism?
Well, in an act of terrorism, obviously there needs to be some sort of political gain by terrorizing civilians. That's the actual definition of terrorism. You know, this obviously has not been defined an act of terrorism because of the fact that no one can figure out what political gain, in fact, this crazed maniac was interested in. That being said, unfortunately, as you stated earlier in your description of the program, this particular incident, had it been a Muslim or someone of color, you know, obviously there would have been a more media stilt to make it a act of terrorism. They would have tried to find some association regardless of how disconnected or mildly connected the person may have been to someone in their past to some sort of group that may be working for either political gain or some sort of obviously co-opted agenda. That happens a lot, unfortunately, with groups like Al-Qaeda and what they're calling ISIS and these groups that have, you know, recruited mercenaries, unfortunately, from intelligence agencies from around the world. So I would say not calling it a terrorist event is probably the correct, appropriate type of description for this particular thing, only because this individual appears not to be tied to any particular agenda.
Okay, well, now if we look at it from a different security perspective, how can the U.S. ensure the safety of its citizens against copycat attempts such as this one? I mean, regardless if this guy was affiliated with a terrorist organization or just some psychopathic lone wolf, without all violating the freedoms that Americans are used to, such as just, you know, being able to have an outdoor concert, for example.
Well, unfortunately, we live in a world where, you know, it doesn't really take a weapon to do this. We've seen people doing it with vehicles. We've seen people doing it with knives. Obviously, to this extent, where you're getting hundreds of individuals injured, certainly you would need something more dramatic. For example, car bombs and those types of things, unfortunately, the product of choice in some other nations. This particular shooting incident, obviously, has a tremendous amount of attention because there's the massive amounts of firearms that were involved. Yeah, I think the number was over 20 firearms and thousands of rounds of really military grade weaponry that's available in the market. And unfortunately, the gun lobby and the NRA, they do have a good intent on being able to enable the American public to defend themselves against a tyrannical government. But that being said, you also have a government that is massively out-militarized the public. The police force has been militarized. Unfortunately, the amount of weaponry that's across this country that belongs to the government completely surpasses anything that any firearms, even automatic or military-grade firearms, could have a chance of fighting against the U.S. government. So it's a unfortunate event that occurred. But at the same time, gun control and trying to control people's weapons that are already in the market, saying that people are claiming that people are going to take back their weapons. I just don't think that that's a logical approach. I think what we have here is we have a society that has unfortunately allowed the people in their society to operate in a way where there are no more asylums and there are no more treatments for the individuals that do have psychological defects from their social environments to their family environment, and obviously throughout their entire lives. Some people are very antisocial, which appears to be this particular individual. He has some social skills that were not developed because of his family experiences with his father and other experiences that he had along the way with his work environment and obviously with his gambling habits. So this is an individual who, obviously had, a tremendous amount of weaponry and didn't have any oversight from a sociological perspective. And that's really, I think, the crux of the issue that we have here is that, I as a child was raised with rifles. My father was in the military, and I actually was able to carry my rifle to high school and fire my rifle on the rifle team. Now, we had a firing range. Obviously, we had the ROTC program. It was an acceptance, and everyone became very knowledgeable of the rifles, and everybody understood, how you were supposed to manage yourself around rifles. And that was more almost like a Boy Scout upbringing that we had in the country. I don't think that that kind of mentality exists as much anymore. And I think it's just a free-for-all. So I think what we need to go back to is a form like the Swiss and a form, governments that are more in construct, where everyone in the society understands the safety regulations and people are somewhat supervised throughout their learning experience.
Okay, so we just have about 1 minute left, Scott. I guess if I understand the gist of what you're saying, that now is not the time to discuss gun control, and you're talking about kind of changing the mentality that people have about the relationship to guns and the Second Amendment, but now people should be focusing on mental health, because you mentioned that the shooter was a loner, he was very antisocial, the social habits he did have, such as gambling, they can be problematic. So if I get you right, then mental health should be the focus here, not so much gun control.
Absolutely. I think we've lost mental health. If you look at some of the great countries in the United States, Kellogg Company was actually founded on an individual who was trying to create food to help the mental health of individuals in an asylum near Battle Creek, Michigan. There's a lot of history here that we've lost as a nation in maintaining the mental health of our society. And unfortunately, the pharmaceutical industry has taken over, and it's hundreds of millions, if not billions, of dollars in pharmaceuticals that are being distributed. And unfortunately, there are some reports coming out that this particular incident may have been somewhat affected by even Valium diazepam as a method. So, I don't believe that the pharmaceutical industry is the answer to our psychological training in the country. And at the same time, I also, you know, you've got to take a look at the way that this is being sensationalized. A lot of politicized groups are saying that this is a movement to create a left-wing sort of civil movement against the right. You've had individuals like Anthony Schaefer going on Fox News saying that this is a conspiracy by the left to militarize the left. And that's really wrong. And then you also have individuals that have gone so far to say that this is, you know, a situation that has got the people involved in just a tremendous amount of anti-government, anti-social aspects because the government's gotten so out of whack. And I believe that that's part of it, but I certainly don't think that this individual had the wherewithal to create some sort of anti-government. I think he was just an anti-social individual who had some, you know, some screws loose, and he snapped and did something that was incredibly, incredibly horrific.
Scott, thank you very much for talking with us today, especially your remarks about how mental health should be the focus nowadays instead of gun control. That was very useful. Thank you. Now we're going to hear what someone else has to say, and that individual is Mr. Joe Yosbacher. Joe was a member of the Committee to Stop FBI Repression, one of 23 anti-war activists attacked by the U.S. Department of Justice. He is also a rank-and-file union activist and is involved in the struggle to stop police crimes in Chicago.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Joe, this tragedy proves that lone wolves come in all colors and creeds, not just dark-skinned Muslims like the stereotype infers. So what effect do you think this incident will have on how Americans perceive of large-scale acts of violence and whether they're labeled mass shootings or acts of terrorism?
So I think to answer that question, we've got to do some background. The first thing is to say that this is not the largest mass shooting in U.S. history. The victims of the rulers in the U.S., you know, black people, Native Americans, they've been subjected to larger massacres. For example, the massacre of African Americans in Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1919. And across the country during that racist violence that summer, when this is referred to as the largest mass shooting, that racist and national oppression gets erased from history. Remember, too, that a black person is killed by the cops every 28 hours in this country. Those cops are not held accountable for those murders. So going back to your question about how Americans will perceive of this, American perception is conditioned by the ruling class and by the racist national oppression and by war. Let's remember, the U.S. was founded on, first, the genocide of millions of native peoples. Second, U.S. was founded on the enslavement of Africans. You know, millions died in the Middle Passage, and millions more survived and then suffered the cruelest form of slavery in history, which lasted for centuries. And then their descendants were locked out of citizenship for another century after the Civil War, and they're denied full equality until today. And the third component of U.S. history is war. The U.S. first war of conquest was to seize half of Mexico. The population of that land that we conquered was hunted down as criminals and denied the rights of citizenship. And again, to this day, their descendants, the Chicano people, are denied full equality. And, you know, for the past century, the U.S. has fought one war after another. Since the Second World War, U.S. armies have caused the deaths of 4 million Koreans, 5 million Vietnamese, and in the past 25 years, another 4 million Arabs and Muslims, the current main target of U.S. aggression abroad. So, you know, so why is there no mass anguish over the deaths of the thousands killed when, you know, when Trump and U.S. allies bomb Iraq and Yemen? There are 40,000 dead civilians in Mosul since Trump took office. To more directly answer your question, I don't think this will go down in history as domestic terrorism. The word terrorist and terrorism is reserved for Arab and Muslim people. I don't think this will be called domestic terrorism until the people of this country reject that poisonous brainwashing.
Okay, so if we look forward then, we try to find ways to prevent what happened in Las Vegas, which was a gunman smuggling many guns into his hotel room and then targeting victims outside his window. I mean, how can something like this be prevented and people's security be ensured? What do you think?
Yes, the U.S. is the most violent of the industrialized countries in the world. And there have been, you know, one mass shooting after another. But the violence in this society is much greater than those mass shootings. And is the violence here mainly because of the presence of too many guns? I don't think that's the starting point. Again, all of that history, genocide, slavery, colonialization, war, has left our country with people, many people, whose minds are filled with hate. Look at the crowds that cheer on Trump's venom. I think we'll bring an end to the violence that people here, you know, visit on each other when we bring an end to this system, which is built on those oppressive social relationships. Let me point out, too, that the police and the politicians, they use these incidents of mass murder for the main thing that they'll do in response to this is to get support for militarization, to increase their weaponry, which is then used against these oppressed communities. You know, here in Chicago, for example, the mainly Black and Latino communities in Chicago, the cops will demand bigger budgets, military-grade gear, and they'll rely on the fear instilled among people everywhere by these mass shootings. They'll get complicity to continue their reign of terror in those oppressed communities. And here in Chicago, it's a perfect example. It took the release of the video of that murder of Laquan McDonald by the killer cop Jason Van Dyke to make people wake up and see that the police are in fact an occupying army in those communities.
Okay. Well, Joe, we have about 60 seconds left for this segment, so real briefly, how relevant do you think it is right now to discuss gun control?
Gun control is promoted by, you know, of course, the cries of the mourners, and it's pushed heavy by the liberal wing of the ruling class. I'll answer your question with a question. Why do the liberals call for gun control, but they won't support community control of the police? The liberal politicians, they focus on gun control. I don't think they actually care about the workers and oppressed and poor people. They do it because I think they fear that someday people will rise up to challenge the system. So I don't think gun control is the answer.
Joe, thank you very much for offering this historical perspective and also the commentary on the role of violence in American history and society. And I thought it was also very informative how you spoke about the trend towards police militarization. Thank you for that.
Trendstorm.
Now, folks, if we think back on what both Scott and Joe shared with us today, we can see that, I mean, this was really such a horrific act of violence. But there is a legitimate debate over whether or not it should be a mass shooting or an act of terrorism. At the end of the day, I think that we can all agree that these incidents are becoming disturbingly more frequent. It is very difficult to safeguard against them. And there are differing debates over whether or not the focus should be on gun control, mental health, or American society as a whole. At the end of the day, I hope that everyone can come together as Americans and realize that we need to stay unified against these acts of terror or mass shootings, however you want to label them. What happened in Las Vegas was plain evil. So folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. Stay with us.